Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Castle Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Hey there, Mark.
Morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing dynamite. I recently had the good fortune to go to, my aunt has a lovely place out on Long Island.
I've been there. Lovely.
Where she has a great, she, not a ton of property, but she really packs the gardening in on this piece of property that she has. And one of the things she does every year, and she's lived out there since the early 70s, and every year one of the things she's done, and those of you who are on our email list, got a picture of this, is she grows zucchini blossom, well, zucchini is what she's growing,
mm-hmm.
and a byproduct of all that zucchini that she grows, and for we who grew up Italian, there was a dish that we got anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks a year, depending on the season, called zucchini blossoms. And we would pluck the zucchini blossoms and fry them up in a batter and eat them. And people who aren't Italian and don't know about this are like, zucchini blossoms. We got a return email from somebody saying, I heard about you Italians doing something, eating flowers.
Actually,
and things.
We got an email from a listener who is great, and we love emails.
Absolutely. It was a great email.
But they said, you know, it was someone who was not of Italian descent, and they grow zucchinis, and they really enjoy the zucchinis they grow. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, you know, we've never picked the blossoms. We've heard mm-hmm. about it, and then they got an email from us. And the way it works is when you go out there, zucchini grows in the garden, right? But zucchini is an articulated flower. There are male zucchini blossoms and female zucchini blossoms, and they need to cross-pollinate. You know, the birds and the bees, you know, whatever.
That whole
in this
thing.
Case, the zucchini beetle is actually the culprit there. But the male zucchini flower, the female zucchini flowers have a thicker stem.
And that thick stem will actually grow it right into the zucchini, and you'll see it grow right out through the flower.
And the reason it has a thick stem is to hold that zucchini and to support mm-hmm. that zucchini. And the male flower is pretty much useless.
It's
death of pollination.
It's got a regular flower stem, so you'll see it. It looks just like a regular flower.
And they're... You can draw whatever inferences from that you like. After pollination, the male is useless, and you may as well cut them off and eat them.
So what most cultures do is those flowers just kind of deteriorate and fall off like they would on any other plant, where you would cut them in and bring them inside and show them off or do whatever. But we Italians, well, we don't like to waste any food, so we'd fry them up and eat them.
And you can stuff them, too. Mm. I've had them stuffed. They're delicious. They're really remarkable. And very short season. And by the way, you pick them, eat them that day. That's all you got.
They degrade very quickly. There are things you can do with zucchini flowers. And what my family did, and I'll give you, generally we don't talk too much about recipes, but this is something we'll put up on the website for everybody, was a very, very simple recipe. And if you want to cheat, I mean, use something like Bisquick. You toss in there some, and we use flour and baking soda and start from scratch. But you go, and it's very, very simple. And you make a pancake. And what you're doing is you're making a pancake, and that flour can either be chopped and put into there or served as a whole flour, depending on the condition of the flours that you're using. So you put a whole flour in there, and you make little pancakes. And in that pancake, you put a little parsley, a little grated cheese, a lot of black pepper. Don't be shy with the black pepper. Depending on how much grated cheese you've put in, you might want to put a little bit of salt in there as well. And you can use other herbs and spices that you like. And it's really, really simple. And you make these little baby pancakes.
And you can serve them with a marinara sauce, and just you can dip them in by hand if you want.
They are extraordinary. But I need to tell you a couple of quick stories of this last trip out to my aunt's house. My 4-year-old daughter and I went out into the garden and picked the zucchini and the zucchini blossoms. Well, one of the things I didn't tell my little 4-year-old daughter was that sometimes the flowers will actually, a bug will be in there pollinating or doing its thing, and the blossom will close on the bug. So you have to kind of shake the blossom when you pick it to make sure it doesn't go bzzz, mm-hmm. or You might.
Did she get stung?
No, she didn't get stung. She usually the person picking the blossoms is fine. They pick the blossoms, they throw them in a basket, and then they bring them into the house. Well, my aunt's cleaning the blossoms, and then she was chasing the four bees around the house that we brought in. Into the house. Oops.
You got to be careful with that. Even if you put them in your car, same thing.
Well, I went to one of the places that we've been getting zucchini blossoms for the restaurant is a place called Dryer Farms. Well, it's a farm. I mean, it's a working farm in Cranford, and they're picking zucchini blossoms for me. And again, they're kind of like, yeah, nobody really wants these, so here they are.
You Italian boy, here they are.
They're really cheap. So I've been buying zucchini blossoms from them. They're happy that there's a use getting...
they're getting put to good use.
They're getting put to good use, exactly. And so I'm driving back, and apparently the people who pick the zucchini blossoms for Dryer Farms, also much like my four-year-old daughter, don't check to see what are in them. So I am in, like, this buzzing beetle fest inside my car as I'm driving to
Mark
work.
Pulls up and there's a cloud of bugs inside the car.
They're everywhere. And luckily, most of them were zucchini beetles, but I'm driving down the highway and there are a couple of bees buzzing around my car. Also, good news, most of those bees, they're not yellow jackets and bees that really want
they're
to sting you. They're honeybees.
They're honeybees so. That Mark's driving away from their nest so they'll die.
Well, they'll probably die.
It would not go near the hive. Hey,
unless they find like a little honeybee enclave that they can join up with.
Well, I want to tell you that while that is the traditional way to do the zucchini blossoms, I also like them stuffed. But I'll tell you something else. Our chef was playing around with them, mm-hmm. and he's of Italian descent as well. But he was playing around with them, and he basically did them in the whole flour, basically tempura fried.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're just remarkable.
Yeah, there's a lot of memories there for me because that was one of those harbingers of summer. You'd go out to my aunt's house. She has a house right on the water in Long Island. And you'd go out to my aunt's house, and that smell of the frying zucchini flowers meant summer vacation was starting.
And if you put things together, I mean, if you're talking about the summer harvest, summer feast kind of thing, you look at zucchini blossoms, you look at watermelon, you look at tomatoes,
mm-hmm.
And you look at corn, and there you have a defining moment of the Northeast summer.
Yeah, New Jersey summer for sure. You know? You're all the way. Those are the things that you need to have a great summer.
And you know, look, I love a barbecue as much as the next guy, and or a cookout, I would say, as much as the next guy. And hamburgers and hot dogs, wonderful. But that's the kind of thing where you can add to your just hamburgers and hot dogs or mm-hmm. whatever else you have out there, and it's. It just really makes it seasonal, makes it remarkable, and again, they're not that expensive. Zucchini blossoms should not be that expensive if you get them locally in season. And they can get them frozen sometime, and they're not as good.
And again, you're just going to pan fry them. You're going to put them in a very you want to use a neutral oil. For most things, we Italians cook everything in olive oil, but I recommend a more neutral oil for the frying of the zucchini blossoms, just because they are very delicate, the flavors are very delicate, and olive oils very frequently will kind of overpower those delicate blossoms. You don't want to overdo it.
All right. So when we come back, we're going to be talking with Marion Nessel. Her book is What to Eat: An Aisle by Aisle Guide to Savvy Food Choices and Good Eating, which is a reference book for you to use to sort of. It's hard to put the principles we talk about into practice and get great food and nutritious food and make it all work in the supermarket aisle. And she'll be able to help you do that. And we'll be talking with her in just a moment.
And this book is totally worth the money. Because it's about 700 pages, so
yeah,
so.
The per page cost very low. Back in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Our guest today is Marion Nessel. Marion is a professor of nutrition, food studies, and public health at New York University. Her degrees include a Ph.D. in molecular biology and an M.P.H. in public health nutrition. She's won a James Beard Award. Her books include Nutrition in Clinical Practice, Food Politics, How the Food Industry Influences Nutrition and Health. And her latest book is What to Eat, an aisle-by-aisle guide to savvy food choices and good eating.
Hey, Marion, welcome to the show.
Oh, glad to be here.
Now, this book is pretty big, and you know, it's funny because we talk to people all the time, and we get emails from all across the country about people who say, you know, I listen to all your shows, and I listen to all that, you know, we talk about small farmers and local and organic and what's good for you and what's not and what chemicals are in things. And they say, you know, it's almost like you need a degree to figure out how to eat ethically.
Luckily, Marion, you have a degree.
PhD, in fact. So what's the purpose of What to Eat, an aisle-by-aisle guide to savvy food choices?
Well, it's exactly what you just said. After I wrote Food Politics and I was going all over the country talking about issues about food marketing and how food marketing influences what people eat, people would come up afterwards and say, oh, really interesting book, loved your book, but you didn't tell us what to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know what to do. And, you know, when I heard that for the 10th or 20th or 100th time, and I heard it really a lot, I started asking people what was going on. You know, what do you mean you don't know how to eat? It seems really simple to me. You know, my rules are eat less, move more, eat lots of fruits and vegetables, and don't eat too much junk food. I don't think it's any more complicated than that. But people were telling me things like they would go into supermarkets and feel like a deer caught in headlights.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'd go into a supermarket and burst into tears. I mean, it was this really painful experience. So many issues.
Those people should seek some other help. The bursting into tears ones, they should seek counseling or something. That's a little much.
You should read my book.
But it's this whole nutrition issue that we're talking about here, and that you spent a lot of time talking about in the book, of course. It is a little bit confusing because it is sometimes difficult based on what we're seeing and hearing on television and through the media of what we should be eating. It almost seems like it's designed by the people marketing these things to be confusing.
Is there a lot of disinformation out there that you have to overcome with your book?
Absolutely, tons. Absolutely, tons.
What kind of disinformation
when
do you...
When I started doing the research for this book, you know, I live in New York City. We don't have supermarkets in New York City. I didn't really know what people were talking about. And I had to go upstate to find a really big market. I walked into it one day in midsummer, just about this time of year, and they had a homegrown section. And I said, well, what's homegrown? What does that mean?
Uh-huh.
And I picked up a head of romaine lettuce.
Right. Who's home?
Hmm?
Who's home?
Who's home? And how far away? And what does that mean? I mean, there was an easy answer for that, but that was my first question. And then I picked up a head of romaine lettuce in the homegrown section, and I thought, I wonder if they have any other romaine lettuce in this produce section. As it turned out, they had 7 different kinds. Some were sold by the head, some were sold by the bag, some were sold by the piece. I mean, it was just an absolutely bewildering set of choices. I needed a calculator. I needed a scale. I needed shelf labels. I needed all kinds of tools to be able to figure out what the best buy was in that and how much it was going to cost me to pay for an organic head if that was what I wanted. And I thought, that's just lettuce.
Well, now you're right, exactly. Well, let's talk about organic. I mean, do you think there's a value in buying organic food?
Absolutely.
Well,
without any question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's better for the environment. They're not using pesticides. They're not using fertilizers. They're treating animals somewhat better than industrially raised animals. And so, for environmental reasons, it's really, I think, a very important choice. You want to encourage farming that doesn't use those kinds of chemicals. And as far as I could tell, and this is another big question that I had, is the system honest?
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I could tell, it is an honest system. That is, if the product is certified organic, the producer of that product has followed the Department of Agriculture's rules for organic certification to the letter.
Though there are powers that be that are working diligently as we speak to change that.
To loosen those rules.
The interesting thing is there are powers on both sides,
yep.
Which is what I think is really interesting, because with it said, the system as it exists is an honest system, and everybody seems to feel that that's the case. Lots of people feel that the rules aren't strong enough, that they don't really protect animals adequately, and that they don't protect the environment adequately and are not sustainable, and they say nothing whatsoever about transporting foods along thousands of miles.
Well, now,
but one of the things that we shouldn't be afraid to do is come up with new terms that mean different things.
Before we talk about eating locally, and that's you raised quite a large issue there, and we'll deal with that right after the break.
Can I say one more thing about the rules, though?
Sure.
And that is that there's tremendous pressure from the other side to weaken the rules.
Oh, yes.
Just enormous pressure,
yes.
And in every possible way, the large organic producers are trying to make the rules weaker and softer so that they can produce organic foods more cheaply.
Well, and while there are two sides, there are people trying to strengthen the rules and people trying to loosen the rules, big corporations are trying to loosen the rules, who do you think's got the money?
Yeah, right.
So we don't have to think about that too long
it's
and hard.
It's not an equal contest.
We'll be back in just a moment with Marion Nessel. Her book, What to Eat, an Aisle-by-Aisle Guide to Savvy Food Choices and Good Eating. You can find out more about it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The matagat and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And our guest today is Marion Nessel. Her book is What to Eat, an Aisle-by-Aisle Guide to Savvy Food Choices and Good Eating. We were talking about whether or not to buy organic. And Marion, you talked about before the break why it's best for the planet to seek out organic. Well, that's a very good food choice. Is it also better for your health, or is that debatable?
Well, I don't think it's very debatable. Certainly, there's no reason to think that organics aren't at least as good nutritionally as other products. And there's some evidence, still early and still preliminary, that organics have more vitamins and minerals. But the differences aren't going to be very large. And I don't think that that's the really important issue. I know that the producers of organics would love to be able to sell them as infinitely more nutritious than the other kind. But I'm not sure that's the big issue. The other thing is the science on that is really, really hard to do. If you think for a minute of what you would have to do to test whether organics were more nutritious than industrially grown foods, it would be very, very difficult science.
One of the things we do know, though, is that local and seasonal vegetables and fruits are going to have more nutrition in them. An apple or an ear of corn has more vitamins in it, and
if
that
it hasn't traveled 12,000 miles,
that it degrades over time, and that the those vitamins actually get go away.
Diminish.
Well, they diminish. They don't diminish a lot. And only a couple of them do much in the way of diminishing. But they do diminish, and if you want the maximum nutritional value, you want to eat it when it's right off the vine.
You know, it's funny. I've talked to a number of people who we talk about people eating whole foods, not the chain, but eating whole foods. And they say, yeah, I try to eat foods that don't have an ingredient list. What do you think about that as a philosophy?
That's one of my rules for packaged foods is don't buy a package that has more than five.
Right. All ingredients, one.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I like frozen. I happen to like frozen vegetables, for example, and I love them because they have exactly one ingredient.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not always. You need to be careful when even in the frozen food aisle, you'll see a lot of extra ingredients sometimes in your package of peas.
Well, you shouldn't. You want to look for one that has one ingredient.
Right. Says peas. Right.
I'm in. Hey, we have to take a quick break for the news, Marion, but I hope you'll stick with us through the news and join us again at the other side of the half hour.
Happy to.
Super. Our guest is Marion Nessel. Her book is What to Eat, an Aisle-by-Aisle Guide to Savvy Food Choices and Good Eating, and you it's full of information that you really do need out there. Back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Marion Nessel is a professor of nutrition, food studies, and public health at New York University. Her degrees include a Ph.D. in molecular biology and an M.P.H. in public health nutrition. Everybody out there, that means she's no slouch, where she really knows what she's talking about here. Her latest book is What to Eat, an aisle-by-aisle guide to savvy food choices and good eating. You can find out about it on our website. It's tremendous reference work for you to have at home. Our website, of course, is restaurantguysradio.com. Marion, before the news, we were talking about the idea of buying locally, and there are many reasons to buy local food. Nutrition is higher generally. It's more. Mark and I view it that it's more flavorful, and you're therefore more likely to eat great food because that – you know, if your vegetables are local and your tomato is local in season in New Jersey, it's going to taste better than that Guatemalan tomato you've got shipped so far away. But I'm wondering if you would comment. A friend of ours who was one of the founding members of Heritage Foods USA, which we also link to on our website, which works with a lot of these local nutritional foods, he set out the paradigm. He said, you know, the problem with, as we move more toward organic and we move more toward responsibly raised sustainable food, is we've set up a paradigm where poor farmers are able to barely stay on the farm by selling healthy food to rich people for a premium, while rich corporations stay rich by selling unhealthy food to poor people.
Yes, right.
And isn't that the ultimate paradigm of our – how do we get out of this paradigm?
Well, I think we have to support local farmers in a way that's meaningful. I mean, it isn't just that the food is better. It's also the communities are better.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very interested in there are programs throughout the country in that link farmers to institutions in cities so that the farmers get supported and the cities get good food. My department at NYU, for example, has a CSA, a community-supported agriculture.
And if you want to find out how to get involved in a CSA in your community, you can go to restaurantguysradio.com and just look up CSA. There's a resource there for you to find one in your community.
And for those of you listening locally, Rutgers College through Cook College, one of its sub schools, has a great CSA. And actually, Dean Goodman will be on the show from that CSA later in the week.
So didn't mean to cut you off there, Mary.
No, that's okay. I mean, I think it's terrific. There's 60 people here who belong to this. And it not only brings you good food every week, but it links you to the farmer in a way that I think most city folks don't have a clue about.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when we had all the rains in upstate New York this year, the farmer sent photographs of what his farm looked like.
Wow.
And it gives you a whole new appreciation of what it's like to grow food so that it becomes something very real and personal in a way that's very different from buying these things at supermarkets.
And
I think this is good.
You share in the good things that happen to the farmer. You share in the great quality produce. But then you also share in some of the risk, and you also share in some of the down times that a farmer has when things aren't going as well.
And this particular farmer sends out newsletters, and we all get them. I think it's a tremendous education. And something that makes me appreciate that food on Wednesday afternoons much more than I probably would otherwise.
Hey, Marion, let me ask you. Now, you wrote this book because you saw that there was a lot of confusion. People want to eat well, they want to eat responsibly, and they don't know what choices to make because, of course, everybody who makes something, if they have a marketing budget, wants to convince you that their thing is responsible and the right thing that they should buy.
And healthy.
Now, what are the misconceptions that get people into trouble the most? What are the booby traps that are out there that maybe by reading your book you could share with us a few misconceptions from which you've disabused people?
Well, I talk about all issues, from nutrition to environmental to animals care to all of them. I really cover all of it. I think the certification systems and the health claims are the issues that I found most alarming, because if you go and look at a package and it's got a certified something or other on it, you think, oh, somebody has inspected this and they're being held accountable and this is going to be better and I don't mind paying a higher price for it. And many of the certification systems are just terrific. Hardly any of them have a real accountability behind them. And I found that very alarming. The whole business with health claims has been a problem for a long time, where you see, I guess, whole grain Cocoa Puffs is my favorite example, where you think, oh, it doesn't have trans fat, it's got whole grain, it must be a health food, and you forget about the calories.
And the 30 grams of sugar.
Right.
Exactly. And then the whole difference between the meaning of natural and the meaning of certified organic when it comes to meat, for example, or other kinds of
why don't you tell us about the difference between the meaning of in natural and the meaning of certified
organic?
Well,
when I started going into the meat, I wrote the book section by section, and when I went into the meat section, I started out looking for organic meat, and I couldn't find any. And what was funny about it was that there were signs all over the place saying that these places had organic meat. In fact, I was told about one store that only sold organic meat, and I went to it, and I didn't find a single certified organic label. And it turned out all of the meats were natural, not organic, which means whatever the producer says it means. Mm. The only rule about natural is that it has to be honest and not misleading. It has to be truthful and not misleading. And so if the producer tells you, as, for example, the Nyman ranches or Coleman ranches do, that the animals are produced under certain conditions and they're grass-fed and they're not given antibiotics or hormones, if you know the producers, you know that that's exactly what's happening. But if you don't know the producers, you have to take it on faith. There's no inspection system.
Right, and faith isn't always the best way to take things.
It isn't always. I mean, if you know the producers, I know those producers, and I know, and I've actually been to Nyman Ranch Farms. I see how there the animals are raised.
Yeah, and just so everyone in the listening audience knows, Nyman Ranch is Bill Nyman and his wife have put together this group of ranchers that are, I think there's about 600 ranchers now.
Adhere to high standards?
In the group, and it's a super high standard that each of the farmers in this group are hold each other accountable to.
And they're terribly proud of what they're doing, and I think for good reason. I went to a pig farm in Iowa. It was just a terrific thing to see. But, you know, not everybody has that kind of opportunity.
Yeah, it's true.
And the food is expensive.
And the food is expensive, and you either have to take it on faith or just be willing to pay that amount or not be willing to pay. And right now, I think there's so many different kinds of certification systems, some more reasonable than others, so many different kinds of self-congratulatory nutrition stickers on breakfast cereals, for example, or snack foods, where the companies are kind enough to identify the ones that they consider to be healthier options. They're not trying to tell you that they're health foods, they tell me. Mm-hmm. They're trying to tell you that they're better choices for you.
As long as we're talking about the cereal boxes and things like that, can we talk a little bit about, you know, you wrote a chapter on marketing to kids.
Oh, I did.
Can we talk a little bit about the evilness that lies within?
Not that we have a point of view.
I actually do. Because kids can't tell the difference between marketing and education and fact and fiction.
Kids can't tell the difference between marketing and the show if they're young enough.
Right. They don't know the difference. And and there's lots of research that shows that they don't know the difference unless they're carefully taught. And the marketers want to market directly to kids for three reasons. Brand loyalty, so that they'll pester their parents, and this is a stated objective, is to get kids to pester parents. And then the third one, which is the one that troubles me the most, is that they want kids to think that they're supposed to be eating their own cuisine, kids' cuisine, products that come in packages that have cartoons on them,
macaroni,
that are funny colors and whatever and whatever, and that's what they're supposed to be eating, not the kind of boring foods that their parents.
There's actually a fourth one that you neglected to mention, Marion. They're evil.
I try to be more polite.
Well, I don't need to be.
Yeah, right. It's our show. So
they're actually I don't think they're evil. They're just doing their job, which in today's investment economy is to grow their companies in a situation in which there's far too much food available.
Okay, but hold on a second. We've got to go to break right after this. But any other area in life, when an adult proposed a business transaction to a child, we would think it was kind of creepy. That's what goes on every day when there's a commercial trying to sell your child something to pester through you. You know, it's just we don't
Try to make your kid cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
It's not acceptable to propose business transactions to try and get kids to spend money. I think that's immoral, and I do think that's evil. And I think
it crosses an ethical line.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We need to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment with Marion Nessel, author of What to Eat, an aisle-by-aisle guide to savvy food choices and good eating. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply Company is the oldest dealership in New Jersey. They've been equipping and supplying restaurants since 1932, and they know that to make great food, you need great equipment. You need equipment that doesn't break down, and you can't pay too much for it. Whether you need an emergency replacement or a wholesale kitchen renovation, Economy's knowledge, experience, and integrity are indispensable. Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply is a recognized dealer for all major brands, and they specialize in custom fabrication and ventilation. At Economy, they've got all the tools you need to get the job done, all in one place, all priced right, and delivered to your door. Economy is the only dealer in New Jersey that's been approved for on-site demonstrations of the Rational Combi Oven. The Rational Combi Oven is an innovative combination of convection and adjustable steam oven. It's a powerful and versatile tool in your kitchen's arsenal. They also supply competitively priced paper products and all the non-food supplies every restaurant needs. You can visit the Economy Demo Kitchen on Broad Street in Clifton, New Jersey. You can also visit economysupply.com, then call them at 973-279-5500. That's 973-279-5500.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis here with our guest today, Marion Nessel. Marion's book is What to Eat, an aisle-by-aisle guide to savvy food choices and good eating. You can find that on our website, therestaurantguysradio.com. So, Marion, we were talking before the break about marketing to kids. I'm against marketing to kids, and actually in some places it's illegal to have marketing directed specifically at children. What do you think that's workable, enforceable?
It certainly is in other places. The Institute of Medicine, a think tank in Washington, D.C. that does reports for the government, came out with a big report on food marketing to children last year that is just devastating in its critique of the food industry for doing this, for the three reasons I mentioned. And they reviewed a tremendous amount of research, I think 125 studies.
Francis and I shake the shame finger at them frequently as well.
That, these studies all show that, yes, marketing to kids works. It makes them recognize brands, ask their parents for brands, demand brands, have hysterical fits at supermarkets, mm-hmm. And it makes them eat less healthfully. And it's a little harder to link that directly to obesity, but there's now plenty of evidence.
Can I tell you something that's just
too.
Every time I talk about this, I get more ticked off.
He's already to go to the next topic, but he can't.
I can't leave it alone. Because look, they're trying to get your kid to throw a tantrum in the supermarket
and
to buy something.
And
it's working, because you've seen those tantrums. And to buy something, and you think to yourself, how does he know about that? I don't even know what that is, but he wants it, so I'll buy it for him and shut him up. They're interfering with your ability to raise your kids, mm-hmm. and that would make me mad.
Well, one of the things that the people marketing these products realized early on is it is much easier to market to your child and have your child market to you than to market directly to you.
And then they blame parents for not controlling what kids eat.
Oh, yeah, I love
that.
So
that if you talk about, what is going to happen about the child obesity crisis and all this type 2 diabetes that everybody seems to be developing, what the marketers say is, well, we don't have anything to do with it. We're just giving consumers choice.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's up to parents to control their kids.
And you know what?
You don't have anything to do with it.
But again, when you market directly to children, you are marketing to people who, yes, freedom of choice for adults. Mm-hmm. Yes, you should be able to make your case to see if you can sell your product to adults. But you don't. Kids don't have freedom of choice.
You don't get to put a soda machine in my kid's sixth grade hallway. You don't get to do that.
And I say you shouldn't be allowed to have a clown or a monkey or a cartoon market that soda or those corn puffs.
If they take the monkey out, Francis, you'll never get the gig that you were looking to get.
Yeah, no marketing to children on television, no marketing on the radio, no marketing on the Internet.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are countries that do this, that prohibit that.
Yeah, there are. And this report that I mentioned has a great big table where it lists the policies of about 50 countries that have policies on marketing to children. And in those countries, it's not that they don't have kids gaining weight. They do, but it's at a much slower rate than is happening here. And I think the reason for doing it is to make it easier for parents.
Mm-hmm.
Parents feel like they're fighting their kids about this stuff all the time. Not very pleasant when there are so many other things you need to fight with your kids about.
Yeah, exactly. There's a certain amount of fighting built into the relationship.
I'm
we don't need them.
So.
As long as we're talking about marketing, let's talk about the marketing of things like healthy drinks and,
oh, yeah.
and things like that. Can we delve into that for just a minute? Is Gatorade better for you and
vitamin
water?
And,
yes, right.
You know, should we be drinking diet soda? Are those things that are...
For them, as you might expect, the Gatorade has less sugars than most soft drinks, but it's still a soft drink.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still sweet, and it's got some salt thrown in. I'm not sure that's a good idea. And artificial sweeteners, I don't know what to say about them. I don't like the way they taste, so that's a big problem for me. But I think they encourage people to have the feeling that they're supposed to be having sweet drinks all the time. I like to ask the question, when did it become okay to drink sweet drinks all day long?
When I was a kid, and when we were kids, and people don't even remember this, but when we were kids, it was like, all right, you're on vacation, you can have soda, you know,
right.
Or it's Saturday, you can have soda.
Or it's your birthday.
Or once a week we could have soda. If we went out to the Burger King that we went mm-hmm. out to once a week, or the McDonald's we went out to once a week, or once a month, but soda is the drink that you drink. That wasn't what it was in 1982. You didn't drink soda all
well,
the time.
Well, not until the big... super drinks came out, the giant, you know, soda dispensers at the, you know, every convenience store.
Well, there are
store.
20 ounces in school vending machines. That's almost 300 calories, mm-hmm. Enough to, it takes you 3 miles to walk that off. But pediatricians who see obese kids tell me that it isn't unusual for those kids to be reporting consuming 1,200, 1,500, 2,000 calories a day from soft drinks alone.
In their beverages.
How much soft drinks do you have to drink to get to 2,000 calories?
If one 20 ounces 275 calories, then it's six of those.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing.
But if you're drinking them all day long.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And the other thing, we had a woman on from the I don't remember exactly what institute she was from in Italy, but they had done a 7-year study on aspartame, where one of the things that she alluded to was the possibility that things like aspartame and NutraSweet, which is NutraSweet, that those types of sweeteners may not cause you to
you may not lose any weight.
You may not lose any more weight than you would if you were having regular sugar.
Well, there's no evidence at all that,
right.
that they encourage the population to lose weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the use of artificial sweeteners, it has gone up exactly in parallel with rising rates of overweight.
Yeah, it's crazy. Hey, listen, we have to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment. Again, our guest is Marion Nessel. Her book is What to Eat, an Aisle-by-Aisle Guide to Savvy Food Choices
and
Good Eating.
And we got to talk about milk.
Yeah, we'll be back and we'll be talking about milk, both pasteurized and unpasteurized in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Cafe Lombardi Restaurant. Our guest is Marion Nessel. Her book is What to Eat, an Aisle-by-Aisle Guide to Savvy Food Choices and Good Eating. You can find out how to get that on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Marion, we want to talk to you about milk.
Love it.
Okay, well, this is where we have a lot of demand for organic milk. Justified, not justified, people want no hormones in their milk. What's the story?
It's the first place that people seem to be venturing into with their organic purchases.
I think it's a great place to begin. You don't want bovine growth hormone in your kid's milk? Buy organic. I think it's a really good reason for doing that. The evidence isn't in. There's no real evidence for harm that you can prove. But if you don't like the idea of giving that hormone to cows, buy organic.
You know, you give the hormone to the cow. The cow eats the milk. The cow, look, you tell mothers who are nursing not to eat and drink certain things when they're nursing because it passes through to the baby. Okay? What does a cow do? It eats and drinks, and that becomes milk, and then we put that into a bucket and then you drink it. So what the cow eats and drinks or is injected with or has put in their feed, whether it's antibiotics or growth hormones,
matters a lot.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think it would be foolish to think otherwise.
Yeah.
Whether there are studies done on this or there aren't studies done on this, I think that we'd be foolish to think otherwise.
I got a quick story. I got a funny story for you. Here's an agribusiness toady response I got from two or three administrations ago. We tried for the first time, and we now do, to carry milk that has had no synthetic hormones added, no recombinant bovine growth hormone, no synthetic hormones at all added. And so we called, in New Jersey, we called the Department of Agriculture, And we got to speak to a fairly high-ranking guy up there because I couldn't get an answer, couldn't get an answer. I used some contacts to get fairly high up in the food chain there. And the guy said, I said, I want a list of dairies that claims to, that produces that milk from cows that don't use...
No hormone milk.
Right. He's like, sir, all milk has hormones.
I'm sorry. We don't have a list like that. All milk has hormones.
All milk has hormones. That's why that was the rationale for not labeling it.
You know,
except
what?
I only want the ones with the cow hormones in it, okay?
Well, the FDA says you can't tell the difference.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe they can. Hey, Marion, we got to run because the news is coming up. I wish we had two more shows to do with you.
Well, it was a pleasure.
Super.
Thanks very much, Marion.
Okay, thanks so much.
Bye.
That's Marion Nessel. Her book you can find on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. It's called What to Eat in Iowa, Our Guide to Savvy Food Choices and Good Eating. You need to have it as a reference at home. Hope you've enjoyed the hour. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.